Chapter 1. I must establish up front, to prevent any dashed hopes or misplaced anger, that I am not the raffle baby. Please do not be discouraged by this, for I promise you, fairy tale, lullaby, soliloquy, myth. As you will discover, I am a man of precision. I will give you words, but only the ones you need. Hold out your hands. There. Now, let's begin. Most days I sit on the front porch of my cottage with my Reader's Digest and a cup of coffee. And whether it be day or night, I am now always in my own twilight. My eyesight is poor, but there's enough left that I can look into the past to tell you this tale. You are kind to listen to the ramblings of an old man. See here. I have lived my potential. And I am content. I hope you can say that of your life. I worked my 40 years and shored up my progeny so well that most are too busy to visit. I watched as my skin withered into translucence, like the papery wisps of an onion peel. But is it not true that anything you can see through takes you someplace else? In the solid middle years of my life, Walter Mitty was my Lawrence of Arabia. Hear me now. This was by design, and so it was good. Like you, perhaps, I have stood at the edge of an ocean, though it was too far away for me to touch. I plaited my love's hair on the day she died, and she kissed my hand and held it to her cheek as if I had given her silks and spices from Atlantis. I digress. But surely you will forgive an old man. The story of the raffle baby begins with me in the Laurel Highlands of Pennsylvania. Trust me, I will get to her in time. But to know her, you must know me. It was 1936, and the Great Depression gripped us like a circus strongman. Before, the men in my town descended deep into the coal mines, while the women kept house and tended children. The miners were a rowdy crew, until, all the veins exhausted, the miners of our town were forced to look for work elsewhere. Some left with promises to send money, others, like my father, just up and walked away from everything, never to return. The last we ever saw of him, Mother was running alongside his old truck, dirt and gravel flying up into her hair and face, her husband behind the wheel, moving faster than she thought that old, dilapidated truck could ever carry him. Ankles swollen with the moisture of a summer's humidity, it wasn't too long before the truck was gone, and she was chasing a swirling cloud of dust that mixed with her breath and choked her from going on. Was it unusual in those times for a mother to send her 12-year-old son out into a world clogged with despair? No. There were plenty of us youngsters out there, riding the rails, stealing apples, hustling odd jobs. Tramps, they sometimes called us. But we were not ashamed. And I was fortunate. I was often hungry, but I did not starve. I might have been cold, but I did not freeze. You might as well know that it was more than my mouth to feed that prompted my expulsion from our home. My father's void forced Mother into a place deep inside herself, accessible only to her. I was grateful for the days when she looked at me but saw nothing. And I was frightened of her, frightened of the uncharted geography of her temperament, frightened of her many minefields and those grand sweeps of no man's land that bordered her every province, her every nation. After Father left, looking at my mother was like trying to read a map of an unknown land. Her face was a grid with lines pointing this way and that. Her brow was a mountain range mired in self-pity. Her intentions were obscured by a harsh topography. I did not have the legend to traverse her, so I simply existed on the outskirts of her despair.